Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zemer. It's my privilege to serve as a minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Elaine Bowen, who's serving as our worship associate. We're very excited today that well over a dozen of the groups, committees, entities in the congregation will be having a table today, both in the Founders Lounge and downstairs, the Founders Lounge just outside the sanctuary and downstairs in Fessenden Hall, to share with you the activities that they will be pursuing this year and the ministries, the ways in which you can get involved in their ministries. They'll have information about their efforts and be able to answer your questions and also sign you up to participate. So I hope you'll take some time to walk around and visit the various groups who serve so well in our congregation and our larger community. We also have a special announcement this morning from Reed Parsons and Joel Slater.
Ever since Summer Institute, our youth group has been brainstorming ideas for service projects that we could do to help the community. We considered cleaning up public spaces, volunteering at community service establishments, and we finally came to the decision to work with Kent Social Services. Because the service auction is coming up, we thought it would be a great opportunity to ask you, our congregation, to help us with our project by bringing any spare non-perishable food items to the service auction that you'd be willing to donate. And for every item of food we receive, we will give you one Hershey's Kiss in return. A kiss from the youth, so to speak. We hope to see you all at the service auction. We will be putting together an Ohio-themed gift basket to sell at the service auction, the proceeds from which will be going to Kent Social Services. And there will be tickets to the service auction sold downstairs after both services. So, thank you very much.
Thank you. I just wanted to add that the service auction, the date of that is November 5th. The theme is Thanks for Giving, and again, repeating what Reed said, tickets will be available after both services downstairs. Thank you.
Come into the circle of love and justice. Come into the community of mercy, holiness, and health. Come and you shall know peace and joy.
Religious language can be a challenge for Unitarian Universalists. I was reminded of this on Thursday evening when I was participating in an adult religious exploration class and discussion turned to the words salvation and faith. Over time, I have made my peace with many loaded religious words from my Catholic past. I can now say the word God aloud without it feeling foreign coming from my mouth. I can sing hymns as they are written, not reading ahead, without feeling I am betraying my own theology. I have discovered my soul and know I am blessed. I understand that this is not so for everyone. Which brings me to our topic today, mercy and the act of being merciful. My past reminds me of a responsive Sunday prayer in Catholic Church when all responded with, Lord, have mercy. Lord, have mercy. I also recall the 1971 Marvin Gaye song, Mercy, Mercy Me, and also hearing people from the South with whom I have worked invoke mercy as either an exclamation or commentary on a situation. I'm not yet clear on my definition of mercy. I imagine you may not be either. I wonder how Unitarian Universalists will embrace mercy within the context of our common faith and individual beliefs. Come, let us explore mercy and worship together.
I'd like to begin this part of our worship service this morning by saying that our worship is always public worship. where all are welcome, members and friends of the congregation, and certainly our guests. But sometimes when we gather on Sunday morning, we take the opportunity of being together to celebrate the traditions and rituals that bind members and committed friends to this church together. This morning's commissioning ceremony fits into that category. And as the members and committed friends of this congregation participate, we hope that our guests will gain an understanding of how we make promises and covenant with one another. And now we will dedicate our RE teachers, our youth group advisors, and our coming-of-age facilitators, who will be giving their time and talents to support the faith development of the children and youth of this congregation. And there are parts in the litany for everyone, including children and youth, so please follow along in the yellow insert in the order of service. And as I anticipated, most of our teachers, youth group advisors, and facilitators will be with us second service, but I'm going to read the names of everyone so that we all understand the scope of volunteers that it takes to administer our program of religious education. And teachers, facilitators, and advisors, as I say your name, please stand and remain standing until the end of our ceremony. Mary Leeson, Laura McChrystal, John Boers, Dan Hayes, Trudy Deal, Sandy Eagland, Isabel Farnsworth, Leah Gillig, Joe Coomerly, Amanda Rome, Andrew Rome, Vivian Sandland, Lauren Straubauer, Bobby Beal, Rhonda Richardson, Renee Rahudsky, Camille Pavlicek-Fazer, Beth Coomerly, Christina Spade, Christopher Sperry, Marianne Casper, Cheryl Spur, Julie Linneberg, Jim Scott, Joel Slater, Ann Verweebe, and Jennifer May. Those adults who lead our children and youth are like fragments of a mirror whose whole design and shape we do not yet know. While we are not the source of light itself, you will reflect the light of truth, understanding, and knowledge into the dark places of this world, into the unlit corners of our hearts. We dedicate these RE teachers and youth group advisors and coming-of-age facilitators, then as partners on our spiritual journeys. We join you and bless you with willing hearts and hands held in a common purpose. May you reflect the light of truth and warmth of love into the unlit corners of our hearts. So may it be.
Spirit of life and of love, spirit of mystery and wonder, spirit of mercy and justice, teach us to live in harmony. May we not be divided in our own souls. May we be undivided one from another. May we not be disconnected from this earth, this universe, this life, from everything, from all, from you. Spirit of life and of love, we come this morning carrying our sorrows and our joys. Those who are faltering now, may they be reminded today of a way to find their balance. And for those of us who are moving forward, buoyed by the beautiful joyful, uplifting events of our lives for those of us who are moving forward on an even keel. May we remember to keep our balance. Finding and keeping our balance is a central part of the practice of a spiritual life. We come this morning grateful for all the gifts we have been given. Amen, and blessed be.
I've never really found William Shakespeare to be terribly accessible, but this piece from The Merchant of Venice is quite different. The quality of mercy is not strained. It droppeth as the gentle rain from heaven upon the place beneath. It is twice blessed. It blesseth him that gives and him that takes. 'Tis mightiest in the mightiest. It becomes the throned monarch better than his crown. His scepter shows the force of temporal power, the attribute to awe and majesty, wherein doth sit the dread and fear of kings. But mercy is above this sceptered sway. It is enthroned in the hearts of kings. It is an attribute to God himself. And earthly power doth then show like God's when mercy seasons justice.
We had an unusual opportunity presented to us this week, which altered my plans for this service a bit. I had intended to explore the meaning of mercy as expressed collectively, to consider the ways which we as private citizens can influence our societal capacity for mercy. I thought I would take as an example the impact that our current economic challenges are having on so many unemployed, underemployed, homeless, hurting, hungry. How can we individually shape our societal response to those who are suffering, to those most vulnerable among us? And in fact, those are still the questions that I want to consider. However, the public concern through which I want to explore these questions has shifted. You see, late last week, I learned through a communication from the folks who are organizing the Unitarian Universalist Association public advocacy and witness campaign, Standing on the Side of Love, that they were asking all of our congregations to participate in a Dream Sabbath. Dream Sabbath is an idea conceived of by Senator Dick Durbin, who's also the original sponsor of the Dream Act. DREAM stands for Development, Relief, and Education for Alien Minors, and it's an act that would enable undocumented immigrants who came to this country as young children to earn legal status. Despite wide bipartisan efforts, the bill failed to win passage by only 5 votes when it was most recently introduced, and Senator Durbin plans to bring it forward again soon. His hope is that by participating in a DREAM Sabbath, faith communities across the country, and as of Friday, well over 200 faith communities of all different traditions had indicated that they would participate. The hope is that this collective act amongst people of faith will influence our legislators as they engage with a serious moral issue of our time. So the folks at Standing on the Side of Love asked me when they saw that I signed up to say, yeah, we can do that in our service this Sunday. We can acknowledge that briefly. That fits with what we're doing. They asked me, well, would you like to have a dreamer come speak? This was on Tuesday. And I said, sure, thinking that it wasn't very likely that they would find someone. Thursday afternoon had me on the phone with Jose Mendez. I'm delighted to have him here this morning as our guest. Jose has lived most of his life in the United States. He's 19 years old and graduated from high school last year. He's one of the hundreds of thousands of young adults whose lives would be completely transformed if the DREAM Act were to become law. He's here this morning to share briefly his story with us. Please join me in welcoming Jose.
Hi, good morning, and well, my name's Jose, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about my story. I came to the USA 12 years ago at the age of 7, with no knowledge of the English language. You may ask why we came here. Well, for family reunion reasons. My dad was already here in the USA for 5 years. He came here to give us a better life and reunite with my mom. In that time, we were in Mexico. I had no knowledge of my legal status until my junior year in high school. At that time, I was ranked number one. My grades were straight A's my freshman year and sophomore year. Everyone was talking about applying for college or financial aid or FAFSA. When I asked my mom if I could get my Social Security card, she explained that I didn't have one and that I was undocumented. That's when depression hit. My grades started falling. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know if I could apply for college. I found out that I could apply for college, but I went to counselors and they told me that I had to pay out-state tuition. That'll be 3 times as much. I couldn't afford it. Not even community college. I work as a shoe shiner, and that doesn't pay me enough to pay for my college. I'm 19, I can't drive, I can't work legally. I help my dad with whatever I can, and he will give me like an allowance to help me out, you know. I work with organizations. Recently, last year, we did a campaign on Facebook, trying to get votes for the Dream Act passed in December, but it fell with 5 votes in the Senate. For my future, I'm trying to move to Seattle, Washington to start college as I provide Dreamers in-state tuition, and I will be able to get a driver's license and live a semi-normal life. I don't want to leave. I love Ohio. I've been here for 12 years now. This is my home. All my friends are here. All my family is here. I'll be moving away alone, starting a new life, a new beginning. Like I said, I didn't have like my teenage years. I always worry about what will be next for me. I can't socialize, I can't drive, I can't go to places. I have to take the bus to work every day. I have to get up at 7 a.m. in the morning to be at work by 8. I have seen for myself how deportations affect families. It's very difficult to see that, and I always worry about my family. I always worry about my dad getting stopped by the cops and asking for a simple traffic like violation, like let's say running a red light. They will stop you, and of course they will ask for your driver's license and insurance and registration of your vehicle. Since you can't provide a license, what would they do is arrest you and tow your car, and they will proceed as they will call ICE, and you will be set for deportation. And that's very difficult because, like, I'm afraid of driving. Like, I want to be able to drive and go to school and better myself. But I can't do that right in this state. And that's a little bit about my story. There's a lot of people that say, well, why don't you go back? Well, I tell them, go where, this is my home. I've been here for 12 years now, and, like, I really don't have anyone back home and or back in the country I was born. But this is my home, and all my family is here, and I want to be part of this country, and I want to better this country. I want to go to college, be a psychiatrist, and help people. It's not for me. I view it as for helping others. As I want to become a psychiatrist, I want to help people solve their problems, and I hope our government understands, and I hope the Dream Act passes soon.
A few weeks ago, when I was talking about the obligations to which we're called by covenant, I shared with you a passage from the book of Micah, chapter 6, verse 8. And what does the Lord require of you but to act justly and love mercy and walk humbly with your God? Love mercy. What does that mean? Aside from our occasional use of that passage from Micah, we don't tend to talk about mercy so much in our Unitarian Universalist congregations. I checked in with a few people and got a sense that I want to check with the rest of you. How many of you would say that your first association with the word mercy is as a religious term? Okay, and how many of you would associate it first with a political or judicial term? A few. Both associations are valid, and the history of religion, at least, are actually intertwined. To see the strands clearly, let's start with the judicial meaning first. Any dictionary will tell you that one meaning of the word mercy is leniency, as in the convicted asked for the court's mercy in sentencing. In this context, a person asking for leniency or mercy has clearly done something wrong. Justice could legitimately demand that the wrongdoer pay the full penalty for their transgression. Mercy considers circumstances justice might not take into account. Mercy offers compassion and a second chance. Closely related but somewhat different is a political meaning of the word. This definition of mercy refers to compassionate treatment of an adversary or an opponent. In this context, the person with the capacity to extend mercy is in a position of power over the person who stands in desire of mercy. This is maybe easiest to imagine on the battlefield, where the victor chooses to spare the life of the enemy. In both of these contexts, the courtroom and in battle, mercy has to be understood in light of a difference in power. The judge has the power over the person to be sentenced. The victor has the power over the vanquished. This sense of a power differential has influenced Christianity's interpretation of the meaning of mercy. We can see this clearly in the debates our universalist religious ancestors had with their orthodox religious colleagues of the day. The distinctive theological feature of 19th century universalism was the belief that all people would ultimately be saved, that no one was destined for eternal damnation. This was in contrast to most other Christians of the time who believed that God's justice required the punishment of sinners, which included just about everybody. To deny your desert of endless punishment is to render your salvation utterly impossible, wrote Charles Finney, who was a prominent 19th century evangelist and leader of the Second Great Awakening. God can never forgive you on this ground, he continues, because you are trying to be saved on the score of justice. God's justice demands punishment, and the only reason some are not eternally punished, he said, is because they repent and throw themselves on God's mercy. That was the orthodox 18th century understanding of mercy. The universalists saw things very differently. They frequently used the metaphor of parenthood to understand God's nature. Just as no parent would consign their child to damnation, neither could a loving God. They emphasized the harmony of God's justice and mercy. If some are saved against justice and others destroyed against mercy, then God is both unmerciful and unjust too, and is a contradiction, and can stake no claim to the character of a kind, impartial father. This passage comes from an unsigned editorial published in 1824 in The Restorationist, a universalist newspaper. God's partiality in saving some and destroying others, the author continued, would show us that God must be weak on one hand or cruel on the other and imperfect on either. And being thus impartial, weak, or cruel, God could not be the object of rational confidence and worship. While the Universalists had disagreement amongst themselves about whether God granted salvation immediately to all people or required some limited period of punishment before reconciliation, all the Universalists agreed that God would ultimately reconcile all people to God's self. This was the defining feature of their theology. God is love, perfectly just, perfectly merciful, perfectly compassionate. Compassionate. That's another synonym for mercy, which is neither clearly secular nor clearly religious. This definition of mercy refers to kindness shown to victims of misfortune, compassionate treatment toward those who suffer. It's this meaning that we have in mind when we talk about humanitarian relief in the face of natural disaster as an act of mercy. Looking at the origins of the word, I learned that this meaning has been in use in English since the 13th century. And looking back even further, I discovered that the Hebrew word most often translated as mercy, rahamim, shares the same root as the Hebrew word rehem, which means womb. Borowitz and Schwartz, in their book, The Jewish Moral Virtues, point out that mercy or compassion is the first quality ascribed to God in a central piece of the Jewish liturgy. Like a mother who has compassion for the child growing in her womb, God has compassion for everyone. This doesn't mean, they continue, that God is indifferent to the demands of justice, but rather that justice and compassion are balanced. In Midrash, they note, in Genesis Rabbah 12:15, God says, "If I create the world on the basis of mercy alone, people will be great sinners. But if I create it on the basis of justice alone, the world will not endure. I will create it with both justice and mercy, and would that it then endure." Thursday night, a bunch of us met to discuss the virtue of justice in this series on virtue that we've been exploring. We ended our time by talking about the ways in which we as individuals feel called to work for the creation of a more just world. Many passions were expressed. In our group, there were those who felt called to economic justice, GLBT justice, work against the injustice of hunger and homelessness, opposition to the death penalty, racial justice, environmental justice, immigrant justice. Every one of us is called in some way to the work of justice. Those are among the commitments named in our circle. The pursuit of justice is central to Unitarian Universalism. It's what drew many of us to this religious tradition. And yet what I mean to say this morning is that mercy is equally important. Before we sing the line in Carolyn McDade's beautiful song, Spirit of Life, about giving life the shape of justice, we sing of all the stirrings of compassion. If I asked you to give examples, we could be here all morning. Our hearts are stirred by so many tragedies, the social and environmental consequences of natural disasters, the terrible truth that so many children in our country suffer from poverty, the reality of famine, the persistence of so much suffering. At times, it can feel like too much. Maybe that's why the Tao pairs courage and compassion and mercy. Sometimes it takes courage to keep our hearts open. I hope that your own sense of compassion was stirred this morning as you listened to Jose share his experience. No matter what you think about immigration policy, I hope that we can all agree that children should not be punished for the choices of their parents. Young adults like Jose have lived most of their lives in the United States. They've gone to school here, learned our history, absorbed our values, and aspired to our dreams. They're United States citizens in every way but documents. And yet once they graduate from high school, they're cruelly informed that they don't belong, unable to get a job legally or apply for a driver's license, prohibited from serving in the military or from getting in-state tuition to college or applying for financial aid. What opportunities are there? In recent years, deportations have been at an all-time high, and this has included deportations of young people to countries they have not lived in since they were small children. I believe that we can and must do better. President Obama took a step a few weeks ago when he announced that his administration would no longer prioritize for deportation young people who had not committed any crimes. This is a good step, but it's inadequate. When the DREAM Act passes, young adults who have lived here and who have no criminal record will be able to legalize their status by, among other requirements, passing a background check and completing 2 years of college or military service. Through our individual and collective participation as citizens of our nation, we help create the shape of justice. With our voices and our actions, we help sound the stirrings of compassion. Today, I ask you to be moved by compassion and consider learning more about the DREAM Act. There's information on the social justice table downstairs after our service. Through passage of this act and countless other actions of mercy and justice, pursued in the name of dignity, decency, and respect, we can help call our nation's leaders to be merciful. Love mercy, the prophet implores. What does that mean? It means love kindness, love gentleness, love compassion, love your life, love other people, love this universe. Notice beauty and praise blessing. Celebrate goodness wherever it may be found. None of us can predict how life will unfold for us. Today we may have it all together, but tomorrow may be another story entirely. Tomorrow we may be standing in need of mercy. Wherever you find yourself, take the wisdom of the bard to heart. Mercy is twice blessed. It blesses the one who gives and also the one who takes. For all of us, may it be so. Amen, and blessed be. We have gathered in dedication to the proposition that beneath all our diversity, there lies a unity which binds us one to the other, to the earth and to the stars. We have gathered in witness. Let us take our witness out into the world. Go in peace.